Africa Live on thewhoradio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and we got a serious program for you today. We have coming up in Washington, D.C., African Liberation Day, which is going to be happening on May 26th, Saturday. And every African, you know, within the U.S., every African who can get a ticket to get here needs to be at African Liberation Day. I'm going to play for you today some excerpts from African Liberation Day that happened in 1986 in Philadelphia. Now, this is 1 year after the government dropped a bomb on the African community in Philadelphia, bombing targeting the MOVE organization and burning down a whole block in the African community. And so, actually, the first excerpt that I'm going to play for you is a presentation made by Doc Hatter, who was the Northeast Regional Representative of ANRO, which is the African National Reparations Organization, which was an organization, a reparations organization built by the African People's Socialist Party that had taken on the task of making reparations a household term. Doc Hatter was organizing in Philadelphia and is speaking in this excerpt on the situation there in Philadelphia, the bombing of the MOVE House, and what the organization is doing around that. So this excerpt we're about to play is from Doc Hatter, 1986, African Liberation Day.
I think it's unquestionable. Certainly for everybody in Philadelphia, that the May 13th murders on Osage Avenue here was the most it's really hard to kind of describe it, but I'm saying it was like in terms of an assault against African people by the state, it was the most serious aggression committed against black people in, you know, modern history of Philadelphia. I mean, nothing like that was witnessed in Philadelphia like prior to May 13th. And I think from the number of people that I see here today and I saw yesterday attend the ALD here, when clearly we attempted to raise up the struggles of the MOVE family and their struggle like for freedom and the identification of the real enemies of the people, like in that assault that was made, that from the number of people who were here from, you know, different parts of the country and the support that we've got from people around the world, that this is not just an opinion that I have, but it's an opinion that's shared by people all over like the planet. The May 13th murders of the MOVE family, and I agree with Chairman O'Malley, to me, is part of the consequence of the defeat of the black liberation movement in this country that peaked like in the 60s and 70s. And I think that this can be clearly shown if people, you know, just look at like the history behind like the May 13th murders, is how it came about that like the city was able like to launch that particular like attack against the MOVE family and black people here in Philadelphia. And in addition to that being a consequence of the defeat of the black revolutionary movement, I think for here in Philadelphia, it also represented the victory of the neo-colonialist forces over like the liberation struggle here like in the city. And I think that that's borne out in the history of the movement of MOVE people and people struggling like here in Philadelphia. And you know, that's, you know, what I'm going to talk about like in a minute, but before like I begin to talk about that history, you know, I think that at this point, I think it's important like to point out that although it may be possible, you know, that we can talk about like the either logical or the practical, like differences or mistakes or contradictions or what have you, that we can see within MOVE as an organization or family, what have you. I think that the consequences of the attack on MOVE and on the Black community in Philadelphia makes that discussion merely academic. And that the imposition of that discussion as a precondition for people like to move on that, you know, to me, you know, is an act of cowardice in the face of a, you know, a ruthless, cold-blooded enemy in the city that we've seen operate not just on May 13th, but, you know, through all the years that I've been here. I mean, you know, they've been cold-blooded in terms of dealing like with Black people. I mean, when we talk about Philadelphia and struggle, you know, I mean, you know, we can't talk about nothing but like, you know, Black people being shot, you know, handcuffed and stuff like that. You know, I mean, that's the history of the struggle here in Philadelphia. So I'm saying that, you know, like, you know, that particular discussion, even though, like, I'm saying it can be had, you know, I think that it misses like the point. You know, we miss like the forest, you know, looking at the trees, like when we do that. And as I've heard some people say that, like, you know, well, you can't talk to them, you can't deal with them, you can't do this, you can't do that. I think that's a cop-out. That's, you know, people are, you know, trembling, like, before, you know, like, the city administration. But, you know, just to, again, just try to talk about some of the history. In terms of dealing like with MOVE and cities like attack on these brothers and sisters. My involvement like with MOVE began in 1978. And this was during the time that there had been a series of confrontations, so-called confrontations between MOVE and the city of Philadelphia around what MOVE termed as their religious philosophy. And, you know, that ranged from, you know, demonstrations protesting the imprisonment of animals, like in the zoo, to you name it, you know. One of the things that characterized a MOVE as an organization and their philosophy, if you will, is that, like, they completely, like, rejected, like, the system totally, you know. No ifs, ands, buts about it, you know. They say up front that everything about it, like, is rotten, and that, like, anybody, you know, if they want to be genuinely free and independent people, that they had to totally, like, reject, like, the system. And this was a an aspect of a MOVE, you know, that like was held up as being like a back to nature philosophy or anti technology, you know, all the other different kind of like labels that they tried to stick on them, you know, like to obscure the fact that MOVE saw like as the basis of their and all of our like oppression being a system that was like unredeemable, that you couldn't reform it, that you couldn't change and remold and reshape it, like to make it work, that you had to jump the whole system, you know, completely. And, of course, you know, their particular role in terms of doing that was just that, you know, to just completely, like, reject the system and to, you know, enter into a lifestyle, if you will, that reflected the rejection of the system. Now, back in 1978, like, the conflict between the city, and on that same point, let me back up a minute. And on that same point, at the same time, you see, the city of Philadelphia recognized that what MOVE represented outside of, like, the specifics of what they said, was a resistance on the part of African people, you know, of black people, like, to their own oppression, you know, because, you know, I maintain, like, the a position that, you know, in as many different forms that our oppression take, you know, you're bound to see just as many, like, forms of resistance to it. You know, I mean, black people are resisting, like, their oppression, you know, every day, you know, countless, like, of different ways. And, you know, this was recognized, like, by MOVE, I mean, by the city with respect, like, to MOVE. And I believe that the city's policy in terms of, like, their continued, like, attack on MOVE, both physically and through the press, you know, in terms of, like, propagandizing people, like, to be antagonistic toward MOVE was because they recognized this resistance on their part and felt it necessary to crush it because, you know, resistance in the black community is something that spreads like wildfire. And the broader political climate of the city at that time, as you know, was one that was characterized by, like, the repressive nature of the government as it dealt with black people. We were, like, in this city under the leadership of Frank Rizzo, who first came to power as mayor in 1971 with the mandate from white power in this city to go out and kick the niggas' ass, you know, to get rid of the Black Panther Party, to get rid of, like, revolutionary and pro-independent groups and that kind of thing right there. I mean, this was the ex-police chief turned mayor who shows up at a formal FOP gathering with a nightstick stuffed into his cummerbund, who later on that night was slapping the wives of black policemen in their mouth with blackjacks now. See, they tell you about the nightstick in the cummerbund, but they don't tell you, you know, they leave out the business that he would literally, you know, attack the wives of black policemen, you know, at that particular gathering. I mean, this was like the commander-in-chief of Philadelphia, you know, this was like the order of day for black people, you know, in Philadelphia. And so, Frank Rizzo was in power. And when I say he was in power, I mean the so-called traditional means and expressions within, like, the so-called electoral political system here was completely, like, shut off and denied, like, to black people because he had absolute power, like, in the city. I mean, there was no business about Frank Rizzo, the liberal. You know, it was Frank Rizzo, the cop turned mayor. And, you know, nigga, if you get out of line, I got something here, you know, for you. You know, I'll get you back in line. You know, as he said, he could have, if it was up to him, he could have took the Philadelphia Police Department and turned the whole Bay of Pigs around. You know, I mean, this was the attitude, and this was like the general condition of Philadelphia at that particular time. So, I'm saying, and from that, I'm saying, you have to then, like, appreciate the fact that their insistence on crushing MOVE had to do with their insistence on denying black people any type, any form, any expressions of resistance, like, to their own oppression. Well, in the black community at the same time, coming on the heels of the assault that was, like, carried upon, like, our movement, all right, both locally and nationally, with some of the most militant-like organizations, revolutionary organizations in this city, as in cities all across this country, being dispersed, leaders being, like, locked up and murdered, that kind of thing right there. There were, at the same time, an attempt to impose leadership on black people from without by the white power system here in the city of Philadelphia. You know, it's not unimportant, like, to mention that even though, like, you have a person like Frank Rizzo who's in power and you have, like, a total, like, subjugation, like, of African people, we never, like, stop resisting, stop fighting, like for our liberation. You know, like what brings us here today is that even though like we can recognize that like we suffered a setback, we suffered a defeat, you know, we are merely like the remnants of that resistance, you know, rising back up, dusting itself off, you know, getting ready like for another triad. You know, they've never been able like to completely like crush and eliminate like the resistance on the part of black people. Move was a part of that, and black people throughout this city in Philadelphia were still attempting to struggle, you know, against like the oppression, because Russo was catching hell. I mean, like, it was clear who the enemy was, like, in this town. I mean, you know, Russo didn't have to, like, come out into the black community to try to win people over, because he'd show his face, like, in North Philly, around this city right here. They'd throw bricks at him, you know? I mean, it was clear, you know? Yeah, I mean, there was no bones about it. People saw Frank Russo as being, like, the representative of white power, like, dominating, like, the lives of black people. And, you know, when it came time for elections, that kind of thing right there, he went to the Titans in South Philly, promised them that, you know, the blacks would not come another block further south. He went to the Northeast, you know, told them that, like, you know, they won't cross 9th Street, you know, not one more block, you know what I mean? He promised the white folks, you know, blacks. You know, like, there's always, like, a few people out there, y'all from a couple of dollars here, support anybody, you know, so he put those people out there. But when you look at, like, you know, the results of the elections, that kind of thing right there, he lost overwhelmed. I mean, like, 200,000 blacks would vote, and Rizzo may have about 98 votes, you know, out of 200,000. I mean, it was that kind of rejection, that kind of struggle on the part of black people, like, against, like, the oppression. And that, like, resistance, as I say, was picking itself up, dusting itself off, and becoming more and more organized every day. And what MOVE was doing as an organization in terms of its resistance, in terms of its, like, complete rejection and repudiation, like, of the system, and constantly telling people that we had to fight, was serving as a motivator, you know, as a spiritual kind of thing, like, that kept people going. Because, like, I heard people talk about, you know, one thing about MOVE, that when you get out in the street and talk about MOVE, you know, people, they can disagree with the philosophy, disagree with the dreads, disagree with anything they want. But one of the things that you know, that we all agree on is that the brothers never backed up. You know, I mean, they kept going forward, like, on their belief, no matter what. And, like, when you listen to, you know, like, people like, you know, MOVE had 78 in the Powhatan Village, like a compound, as it was called. You know, they had this platform, you know, and bullhorn. You know, they used to come out and tell the people what the police were doing to them, you know, and people didn't like to hear them stories. But those stories that they were running were real. I mean, the pigs were picking these people up, handcuffing these people, beating them before they put them in the paddy wagon, beat them in a paddy wagon, beat them in a police station, beat them in a courthouse, you know what I mean? Beat them like all the time in prison, and before they let them out, beat them again, you know? When they talk about, like, you know, babies literally being knocked out of people's hands and stopped by these pigs, you see, with these boots on that MOVE called boot cops, you know, that was real, you know? When they talk about, you know, pregnant MOVE members being knocked to the ground and kicked into the stomachs until they had miscarriages and stuff like that, that was real. Those were no exaggerations. I mean, proof positive of that is that everybody in the world witnessed the pigs beating Dilbert, Africa, on August 8, 1978, after Dilbert came out, surrendered with his hands up, unarmed, you know, and people seen it being knocked to the ground and drugged and kicked and everything else. So, like, these brothers, like, they went through hell in terms of resistance and fighting, like, for what they felt and understood it to be, like, the struggle of black people, like, to be free. And I don't think it's no question that they were motivated by, like, the for the liberation of African people, because it's Chairman O'Malley, like identified earlier, is that they took on the name African, you know, as a clear identifier. You know, what's your name? Africa, you know, whatever, John, Charlie, whoever, but Africa, you know. And, you know, that was a clear identification in terms of where they were coming from, in terms of how they viewed themselves. So, they went through like hell, you know, holding up like they believed and struggling as they saw for the liberation of African people. And so, like I'm saying, like, you could not, like, deny the fact that the brothers had, like, I was inspired by, like, their ability to, you know, go through these struggles again and again and again and again. I mean, like, you know, I've seen times when, like, you know, delegations went down to, like, the roundhouse to get, that's the police station, and get a MOVE member out of jail, and he wouldn't be out of jail 15 minutes, he'd be back on the platform with the mic in his hand, telling you, you know, how these pigs were dealing, like, down in the roundhouse, what they did, what the people had to do. I mean, it was like that. I mean, the brothers were like that. And so, as a consequence, the city took the attitude that we got to crush these people at all costs. And in the process, hopefully, like, to crush and disperse the growing resistance, like, in the city. But one of the things that, like, you know, they had to realize was that to literally just deal with the physical thing was not enough. Because that was evident because of their mere emergence. I mean, the physical thing is what they, the military thing is what they banked on, like, in the 60s and the 70s. And now, you know, in spite of all that, they still having to deal with the problem. So they had to come up with something else. And the something else that they had to come up with was that imposition of a new leadership on the part of black people in terms of the movement, like, in the city and across this country. Well, here in Philadelphia, you know, Frank Rizzo represented a contradiction to, you know, this new strategy that they were beginning to formulate. Because, like I'm saying, he, you know, came to power as a policeman, you know, and it was like no compromise, you know, niggas get out of hand, you know, best thing to do is beat him back, you know, in the hand, you know, that was his position. And, you know, that fueled, like the resistance. Well, when he announced that, like, he was going to blockade MOVE and he was going to store them out of his compound, you know, because, you know, people like, you know, they come up with 101 different excuses for 1985, but it was basically the same thing in 1978. The so-called neighbors were complaining about MOVE. You know, it was the same thing. And Rizzo announced that, like, he was going to, like, barricade, like, the compound and stall these people out. And that represented a compromise on his part, because what the intent was from the setup that they put around the compound, because I was there, you know, I was part of, like, the local organization that was struggling, like, the back of the city and the police officers. But when they set up the so-called barricade, you know, that consisted of sandbags and all the houses, like, around the place, machine gun emplacements. I'm not talking about no speculative machine guns like they talked about. But I'm talking about machine guns that were sticking out of the window that you could clearly see, you know. And people, you know, they would be putting rounds in them, stuff like that, you know, talking like the MOVE members, you know. But their intent was to do the same thing in 78 that they did in 85, but were held back, held in check, because of the organization of people at that time. Now, where they began, like, to impose this leadership was that in 1978, many of those people who were involved, like, in the, it was called the Citywide Coalition, that were involved in that struggle, like, to prevent, like, the massacre of MOVE people, were many of the people that we're familiar with today as being political leaders, you know, state reps, state senators, mayors, mayor's helpers, you name it, you know, whatever political arena, you name, they're right there today. But back then, like I said, they were completely shut out of that political arena. And these people in 78, they were able to see in 78 that the question of move involved a broader question. And this is the crux of the contradiction of 1985. In 78, you can understand that the attack on move was an attack against the whole black community.
Right on.
And so therefore, you know, it was necessary to organize black people, like, in defense of move, which was a defense of themselves. Like, that was good. We didn't have no struggle with that in 78. If anybody here was here in 78, know that David Richardson, he didn't have no problems with that. Lucian Blackwell, he didn't have no problems with that. He saw it as being a question against the black community. Walt Palmer, he understood that. Falaka Fatah, she understood that. Father Washington, he understood that. You know, and this goes on and on and on. And these were the people who were being held up at that particular time as the so-called leader of the citywide coalition and leaders of the black community. You know, and they all understood that the attack on move was an attack against the black community. And so, those of us who not only saw it as an attack against the black community, but were raising it up as a necessity for black people to organize themselves to challenge not only this particular incident, but to organize ourselves for total and complete, like, liberation, were not, like, held up necessarily as leaders, but I remember that what they did was they organized what they called a direct action committee. All right? And I remember specifically, like in the organizing committee, the brother Walt Palmer, who was the nominal, like, chairperson of the organization, said, for, you know, all you rappers and clappers who want to get out here and protest and walk up and down the streets, we're going to form this direct action committee, and we're going to let y'all do all the organizing. And indeed, we did all the organizing. And these other people, they did all the negotiations and the behind as I remember, a favorite expression of the brother Dave Richardson was getting in contact with the shakers and movers, I believe is what they call them. That kind of thing right there. And so we get out here and we mobilize, like, the black community in Philadelphia against, like, the attacks against movement 78. We were able to thwart the initial effort to go in and make the attacks, like, on move, military attacks on move. In the process, were able to free three move members from prison and was able, like, to get move people out of the house in Powhatan Village with no charges, because what had happened when they set up the barricade, there were outstanding warrants on people inside the house, eviction notice, L and I couldn't get in, light bills were due, gas bills were due, and that kind of thing. The same thing in 85 was happening in 78. And we were able to get people, like, out of the house through the mobilization of the people. And, you know, none of those issues, like, came up. I mean, they were all dropped. They were seen as just being, you know, justifications for making an attack. Now, what happened after that and why 78 went down the way it did was after, like, we had backed the city out, and how the deal came down was that the city would retreat, drop all the charges, but move had to leave. Okay. So the city, like, pulled back, move people came out victorious, you know, anyway, you know, and, you know, the very same day was up on the platform on the night, you understand me? You know, told you, you know, we weren't leaving our house, and y'all weren't coming in here. If you came in here, you had to come in here with a fight, all right? You know, and that's where it was. I mean, the struggle was right there. The people were victorious. It was the first time they had been attacked, you know, by the city and had defeated an attack. And, you know, I think it was an error on the part of revolutionaries at that time, that we did not like seize upon, you know, the initiative that was generated like in an organization to raise ourselves up. And we allowed like these people here who were designated like as the leaders by like the city and the press and what have you to continue as like the leadership to depend on them to be viewed by the masses of the people like as leadership. And so like in the following week, when it became evident that the city was not going to be satisfied with the bargain that was struck, that is, in terms of their being like backed away like from the compound and moved, staying in the house, and still became like a victor of the situation, that they made the attack. And I'm positive today that the attack was made and planned with the accurate essence of those people that they were holding up as leadership. Because we were not, after it became obvious, because what had happened, the city had set a deadline. All right, when the police moved away, there was a deadline imposed in terms of when they had to leave the house. And, you know, a lot of us hadn't anticipated they were going to leave and had felt that, you know, if the situation rose again, we just have to wage the same struggle. You know, and we're prepared like to do that. But I was saying, what a mistake in terms of continuing to hold these people up, allowing them like to be imposed to leadership came back to haunt us, is that as the deadline approached and we began to see like the city began to mobilize to move against move again in 78, we were not able to pull the organization back together again because the attack had been planned with the acquiescence and the clear okay of the so-called leadership of the organization, that the deal had been struck, because now they can say, well, we did all that we could. And that's exactly what they did on August 8th. You know, they came out and said, you know, well, we tried, you know, we organized, you know, like, why did they have to stay in the house, you know? You know, all the excuses, you know, why didn't they just give up? And so that was pretty much the scenario for August 8th in 1978, from the standpoint of my participation in it. And as how I saw it, and I only want to say this to try and like add some clarity to what I'm saying and some emphasis. Like one of the things that like took place during that period was a demonstration that challenged like the barricade itself. Like during this time, like the food and water and everything is being denied to move, and the police were like holding up gallons of water, pouring it out in front of the children like that, saying you want some, that kind of thing like that. This was being filmed, you know, photographed. And during one of the so-called negotiation sessions, in which like the so-called negotiations had stalemated in terms of what was going to take place, members of the executive like committee had got themselves into a position with the city official where they threatened them and said, well, if you don't do this, that, and the other, well, we're going to have a demonstration. You know, we're going to go against the barricade. And that I later found out that that was also a connivance to deal with the more radical militant sectors of the organization. Because what happened is when they threatened like the city with the demonstration, they came back to the general body of the organization and said, well, listen, y'all, we must have like this demonstration. And they turned to the direct action committee, which I was a part of, and said, well, can y'all organize? You know, that we promised that we can get you all 200 preachers to go down there, and we're going to use these preachers because everybody know they ain't going to attack the preachers and that kind of thing right there. We said, sure. Give us the preachers, we'll organize it, we'll get the leaflets, we'll knock on the doors, we'll do the field work, you know. We'll do the leg work like we always have been doing. Because these people never went out into the community, you know. They was always one at the press conferences, in the, you know, making the press statements in the newspapers, that kind of thing right there. But we were the ones that was out in the street. So we said, sure, give us like the preachers, we'll organize the demonstration, we all go through the barricade, you know. I think the day of the demonstration, we had about two preachers. And we had about 17 of the best people that we had like developed like in direct action committee. And part of like that that development is like that was a period in which we were holding like ongoing demonstration each and every day in front of City Hall, that we would have 8 or 9 people marching City Hall with placards, you know, telling people like what was going on Osage Avenue during the so-called blockade. And, you know, it took a lot, you know, like to get people like to make that sacrifice to go out and do that kind of work, you know. But this was like the core of direct action. And those people who were responsible for bringing like the 6,000 or 7,000 people out earlier, which was characterized as one of the largest demonstrations in Philadelphia had seen anything else. Well, you know, when we assumed responsibility for the demonstration and we only had 2 preachers, so naturally we had to fall back on these people right here. And these people all volunteered to go through the barricade, you know, and were willing to accept the consequences of, you know, taking like the bus to do that, right? And what happened, I don't want to get too detailed, but Brother Chairman O'Malley, he raised like a lot of good points like in his presentation.
What you just heard was a presentation made by Doc Hatter, who was the Northeast Regional Representative of African National Reparations Organization. This was at ALD 1986, which was held by ANRO, which is a which was an organization created by the African People's Socialist Party for the purpose of taking on the question of reparations and making reparations a household word, something it was successful in doing. We plan this because last week we talked with Chairman O'Malley Eshetela, Chairman of the African People's Socialist Party, about not only the upcoming African Liberation Day event, but also the history of African Liberation Day. And he explained to us how historically the ALD mobilizations that the African People's Socialist Party had been involved in organizing were always tied to bringing people into concrete work to forward African liberation. Now, so part of the reason why we're playing excerpts on today from the 1986 African Liberation Day event is because this event was held in Philadelphia 1 year after the May 13th, 1985 bombing of the African community of Philadelphia. And this ALD was held under the banner of, it said, "No More Sellouts, Black Workers Take the Lead." This ALD event challenged this attack on the MOVE organization on in the African community in Philadelphia. It challenged that attack. And also challenged neocolonialism, because for those who do not remember, the bombing of the MOVE organization, the bombing of the African community in Philadelphia, was done under Wilson Good, a black mayor in Philadelphia, an African mayor. And so, you know, this was 1986, so this is a point in time where neocolonialism was you know, really an effective tool of imperialism, where, you know, you have these forces who look like us, who but, you know, who work in the interests of white power, work in the interests of the white ruling class, you know. And so what this ALD was doing was challenging neocolonialism, was challenging the role of the neocolonial forces, and it's something that had to be done. You know, there were a lot of forces who would not challenge Wilson Good, who would not challenge neocolonialism, because challenging neocolonialism, as they saw it, was challenging ourselves, because you have this black face. You know, and so if you call out this black mayor, then it has a negative look on you, you know, because you're black. But the reality is that that there's a class a contradiction that's created in the African community by imperialism. You know, where you have this class of African petty bourgeois forces, this class of these nasty sellouts who, you know, who can, while they look like us, can do things like drop bombs on the African community, or do things like be administrators for white power, be it in the U.S. or you know, or all over Africa or anywhere else where African people are living. And so this ALD challenged that, you know, and also put forward, you know, reinforcements on the way, you know, for Philadelphia. And in fact, later on that year, the World Tribunal on Reparations was held there in the city of Philadelphia, and, you know, putting white power on trial for its attacks on our people, African people. So that's why we're playing these excerpts from the 1986 ALD African Liberation Day, and I want to call on y'all out there to participate in the African Liberation Day this year. You can't go back in time and get to the ALD that happened in 1986, but you can come to the one that's happening May 26th of this year in Washington, D.C. You can find out more information about ALD at alduhuru.org. That's alduhuru.org. We have to participate in this struggle for our liberation. You know, everywhere else around the world, other peoples are fighting, you know, for control of their own lives, for the control of their own resources, for futures, you know, fighting for a future for themselves and for their children, you know, and there will be no exception for African people. It will not fall in our laps. There will be no freedom that's given to us. You know, the only way we're going to get free is if we fight for it. The only way we're going to get free is if we organize and unite our people around the world. We're 1 billion strong. We got to make this thing happen, y'all. So find yourselves at African Liberation Day 2007 on Saturday, May 26th in Washington, D.C. That's in the U.S., you know. So just wanted to put that forward. We're going to continue with more here on Africa Live in just a moment. We're going to take a break and come back with more. And if you want to call in or email in and send in your comments, you can do so. The number here is 1-877-824-3337. And if you're calling from outside the U.S., you can call country code 001-727-824-5700, or you can email us at dj@uhururadio.com, or by clicking email DJ on the right side of your Uhuru Radio website. Hit us up, you know, and find yourself at African Liberation Day 2007. That African Liberation Day is going to be happening under the banner One Africa, One Nation. Black power in the 21st century. We are one people all around the world, African people. Let's get on the ball and get free. Uhuru.
Yeah. Iswele to E Africa. Gotta do this, man. Yeah. Yo, I gotta go, baby. Revolution in the air, baby. Yeah. For my revolutionary people out there, brothers and sisters, this young ace, yo, let me rock like this. Yeah, like the Panthers did in 67. I'm about to run up in Capitol Hill with brandished weapons. Put the peace to the crackers facing. Then ask politely, can we talk about reparation? Now some may say that's rash, but my people getting played like a jackass. And when I think about it, I ain't the criminal, see, you stole me. So the way I see it, you owe me. 42 years since the Birmingham bombing, and I'm still turning pages to see black churches still burning. So excuse me if I ain't interested in rituals, time to get political, yeah. You want me out the country, fine, I leave as soon as you get the hell out of mine. I just believe we ain't here where I stand. Yo, John Doe about to make Americans scared like I'm the president of Iran. It's where you do be at. Yeah, the land is ours. They touch one, then they touch all. Yeah, I know the truth is scary, but what you expect? I'm a revolutionary. Man, I don't want the people calm. Time to create 2-3 many Vietnam. Think I'm joking, yo, I'm serious. We gotta bring down the imperialists. The socialists is coming through. And if you on the wrong side, we coming right through you. Revolution coming soon through your way. By the way, rest in peace, Kwame Ture. There's no time to play, yo. I think somebody better tell him about the great work done by O'Malley. I should tell a courageous fella, bringing back the soul of the body and leader of the African Socialist Party. The first brother that I heard say this phrase, all my revolutionary people help me say, come on. Is where me do be Africa.
Yeah, the land is ours.
You touch one, then you touch all.
Come on.
It's where me to be Africa.
Yeah, the land is ours.
If you touch one, then you touch all.
Yo, the reason why we say that is to remember who we was from way back. Africa, the land is ours. We gonna take it back from the European power. And I'm here to let you know, all your Uncle Tom and Aunt Jemima's gotta go. Yeah, you sold us for a black capitalism right next to slavery. That's the biggest capital prison. Once you take it for the system that enslaved you, you gotta do whatever the hell like they say do. Yeah, you black, but now you speak for whites. You want an example? Look at Condoleezza Rice. You wanna see the best of we? Then learn your history so you can change your destiny, yeah. Yo, E-Africa, you say it's way late too. Now I'm out like the Mau Mau Uhuru, yeah, yo.
This is Max Rameau with Take Back the Land and the Omojo Village. You are listening to UhuruRadio.com, the online voice of the International African Revolution.
African People's Socialist Party Chairman O'Malley Yeshitela's new book, One Africa, One Nation, is available now. In this historic collection, the chairman and representatives of the emerging African Socialist International explain why Africa and all its resources must be liberated and in the hands of African workers and peasants in Africa and everywhere. The chairman's new book, One Africa, One Nation, documents the process of building the African Socialist International, which is rapidly growing in countries throughout Africa and in the U.S., the Caribbean, and elsewhere around the world. For pictures of the chairman's recent book signing tour, and to order your copy of One Africa, One Nation, go to burningspearuhuru.com. That's www.burningspearuhuru.com.
This movement, we need to be moving forward in the struggle. Trust me.
What you waiting for? Join the movement. What you waiting for?
How many more showbiz personalities do we really need on the TV or movie screen? It takes heart to go where I've been and still maintain integrity. You know what I mean? Many don't. Is it really they fought when lines between dreams and reality blur worse than trying to see straight with beer goggles? The mind boggles. People only see what they wanna see. Or is that just what the man wants you to believe? I believe it could be. Allow me to rephrase. It is, but don't be afraid. Cause we don't need to run and hide up in the shade. Let your melanin fade and solar rays when it can, man. And please, woman, stand strong by him. Cause you know you are back home. It ain't easy to make that journey back home. But together we gon' make it. Kind of spirit we got, no one else can break it. It's sacred, nothing to be played with. And the enemy underrates this here
movement.
Yeah, Uhuru, we need to build this up.
elders. You're over, or you still trying to sober up, hungover with bruh fucking. Lost duck is spent on trying to forget, thrown away. Imagine that, when we need to remember. Defeating the purpose becomes Sunday service, a regular attender. Or should that be attendee? An honorable member of our community who would never partake in impropriety. A politician who does precisely this for we. Power without responsibility. We need accountability in this movement. Uhuru means freedom. We need that in this
movement.
Yeah, yeah. Fun the politics. Yeah, yeah.
Movement.
That's right. That's right. Where we going right now?
Build the movement.
Forward. Onward in the struggle. How many more of us need to die needlessly before we figure out that this ain't the way to be? How many songs do we need about unity? If someone can tell me, I'll write them all now. A tissue, a tissue. You'll fall down from the modern day plague spread around the globe. But who's really spreading them though? Don't know what seems to know. Mr. Know-it-all's a madman who roams all over the land. So I guess that makes him nomad. But that makes no sense, man. All a part of his plan. So take the sense from nonsense wherever you can and stand firm by your conviction, specializing non-fiction, but that don't mean conforming to ignorance. Admitting when you're wrong shows how strong you really are. Kids, you're gonna go far in this
movement.
Yeah, yeah, we need a
movement.
That's right, we need freedom today and right now, you know what I mean?
Movement.
It ain't a thing for us to wait for the youth to build, you know what I mean?
Build
for
this movement.
Yeah, we need to build this up right now, start talking about it.
Movement.
Yeah, move with it, move on it, don't sleep in the
movement.
Yeah, you know what I mean, it's real, it ain't a joke, this
movement.
What we need to do, you know exactly what we need to do is build a
movement.
That's right, it ain't a joke, 2006, the time is now, I'm telling you. Yo, yo, break down the cell walls, yo, yo, raise ruckus up in the prison. Yo, you know what I mean, right now I'm unforgiven. Not like Clint Eastwood, but like how I truly should be. Like Nat Turner, trust me, got the burners, lethal. It ain't evil, it's necessary. Uhuru.
Oh,
ooh.
You know how it goes.
Yes.
Spombing. C-Los.
I like this one.
Steps with them in the building for
yeah.
Sure.
Omavi.
That's what you're talking about.
Don't hold back, man. Don't hold back, man. You know how it goes. Right in the ghetto.
Crowds come and I come everywhere I look, man. I see my people struggling, man.
You know how it goes.
I see our mothers having to carry our sons. And you know I see caskets, man. We sold them too many caskets, man.
When you're living in the ghetto.
Necklace now. Two lovers walking by holding hands with their matching bling.
Damn,
blah, blah. Somebody tell the shorty that the pops just ain't gonna be home.
Man, damn.
He was all about his beers, now his kids and his wife all alone. Let the crowds out the bucket, man. Too many black folks suffering. Crack smokes in the lungs again. In ATL, another black got hung again. I've been hoping, but my hopes on low. We keep voting, but our votes don't go. Still scoping for the po-po. Cause the block too hot while you're playing with your life like a yo-yo. No way.
Man, it's hard to live in the ghetto, man. Man, listen, girl. We didn't put ourselves in the ghetto, man. How we got here, though? Man, listen. They got us on welfare, man. Why they stealing everything from us, man? All the gold, all the diamonds in the world, they belongs to us, cuz. They taking it all from us, man. And until we get it back, man, it's gonna be just like this, man. Tell them how it is living in the ghetto, crowd. Tell them, man.
Get rough every day, we will suffer every day till we die. Home no, but still I pray I can flap my wings till I fly. Always at the ghetto where this field is leveled. I don't see no progress playing with these devils. So black people keep muscling. A lot of us call it hungry, man. But without that hustling, more of us stay stuck in the ghetto, still struggling. Damn, still looking for a way out. Said the dope shouldn't be the only way out. And I hope Africans come together, make a band like leather before we all get played out. No way.
When you're living in the ghetto.
Africalive.com. I'm your host, Nibinga Zimbabwe, and we've been playing some excerpts from African Liberation Day 1986, and we're talking about African Liberation Day 2007. Like I said before, you can't go back to the one that happened in 1986 and be there as good as it was, but you can find yourself at the one that's happening May 26th. This year in Washington, D.C. There's a lot of information you can find out about what's happening at African Liberation Day this year at ALDUHURU.org. That's where you want to be. African Liberation Day on May 26th in Washington, D.C. This is, if you have not been in the participant in the African Liberation Movement, now is your time to become a participant in the African Liberation Movement. There is no future for our people outside of struggling, fighting for our freedom, fighting for control of our own lives. Everybody else around the world has to fight to get it, and we're going to have to do the same thing. We played earlier an excerpt from presentation made by Doc Hatter, who is the Northeast Regional Representative for ANRO, the African National Reparations Organization, which was built by the African People's Socialist Party. And he was talking about the bombing of the African community in Philadelphia, that African Liberation Day that was held in 86 was held for the purpose, held a year after the bombing of the African community in Philadelphia, and was held, for the purpose of reinvigorating the African Liberation Movement in that area, and continuing this struggle to free African people. It happened under the banner "No More Sellouts, Black Workers Take the Lead." It was taking on the question of neocolonialism, because there was a neocolonial mayor, there was a Negro who was the mayor there in Philadelphia, who ordered the bombing of the Move House, ordered the bombing of the African community, and is neocolonialism that we face today. It's it's weakening imperialism that we face. You know, even with the black face, even with neocolonialism, it's a failing strategy. But it is up to us as African people to help it meet its end. Imperialism is on its way out, but we're gonna have to help it get out. The African Liberation Day is happening on May 26th. It's happening under the banner of One Africa, One Nation, Black Power in the 21st Century. We are one people, and though imperialism has divided us, you know, with all of these borders, these imperialist created borders that never have ever in our history have ever functioned in our interest as African people. We have to disregard these borders throughout Africa and you know, around the world, and you know, disregard these borders that have been created in our brains, having us defining ourselves as all types of silly things like African Americans and Nigerians and Haitians and all these type of designations that have been given to us by our oppressors. We are African people. Everywhere around the world, we're Africans, and we're one people. And it's gonna take us uniting to liberate our Africa for us to have any type of future. I'm gonna continue by playing another excerpt from 1986, African Liberation Day 1986. Before I do that, though, I want to give a shout out to comrades who are on tour at the moment for the All Diamonds or Blood Diamonds tour. Comrades Dr. Aisha Fields, who is the director of the All African Peoples Development and Empowerment Project, a project that's taking water purification and electrification to African communities around the world under the leadership of African people themselves. You know, it's a do for self program, a program that is functioning in the interest of African people, not a charity program, but one that would put power in our own hands to control our own lives, to deal with our own the crises that are created in our communities by imperialism. Along with Dr. Aisha Fields on that tour is Omavi Bailey, who is a part of Burning Spear Media, who's talking about the HuruNews.com site that we are launching, talking about the other aspects of media that we are taking on in terms of videos and this radio, HuruRadio.com, for the purpose of spreading our understanding of the African Liberation Movement and creating an ability for African people everywhere around the world to be able to communicate with each other about what's happening on the different fronts of our movement, to serve this movement and help it to have a single understanding of what we are dealing with. And also on that tour is Comrade Penny Hess, the chairwoman of the African People Solidarity Committee, organization created by the African People Socialist Party for the purpose of destroying the unity that white workers tend to have with their ruling class in attacking our communities and attacking African people. The African People Solidarity Committee is something that is an organization that the party created for the purpose of winning reparations from the white community to the African community. And so this is a great tour that's happening. Today there's an event that's going on. For those of you who are listening from Alabama, there's an event going on at 3 p.m. today. That's at the Jefferson County Committee for Economic Opportunity, and that's located at 300 8th Avenue West in Birmingham, Alabama. There's also an event that's going to be happening coming up on Wednesday, May 9th, at 7 p.m. at Studio 620, in St. Petersburg, Florida. For those of you who are listening from Florida, you can go to the event on Wednesday at Studio 620 in St. Petersburg. That's at 620 First Avenue South. And you know, if you want to find out more information about that tour that's going on, you can find out information about that at burningspirithuru.com. That's an important tour, the All Diamonds of Blood Diamonds tour. You know, our diamonds, our resources are being stolen from our Africa. And the reality is the poverty that we experience as African people everywhere around the world is a result of the theft of our resources and the theft of our people, you know, who have been dispersed and spread around the world. And we're going to have to reclaim that. We're going to have to reclaim that, and to reclaim that, we're going to also have to understand that we are one African people. So participate in those events. For those of you who are in those areas and able to get to the events, there's more events going on that tour, the All Diamonds of Blood Diamonds tour, throughout the U.S. So go to burningspirithuru.com and find out, you know, where the tour is reaching near you, and go to it. And become a part of the programs that are being taken on. And for those of you who can't get to those events, you can get to African Liberation Day, because the reality is that Sister Dr. Aisha Fields is also going to be there at African Liberation Day on May 26th in Washington D.C. And so is Brother Omavi Bailey. So you can, if you miss them on the tour, you can catch them at AOD and become a part of the African Liberation Movement if you're not part of it. So the next excerpt I'm about to play is from 1986 as well, from African Liberation Day in 1986. This is Brother Mario Drummonds, who's a leader in the African People's Socialist Party in New York at the time. This is from a panel that was happening. I said before that, you know, this ALD that happened in 1986 really focused on the question of neocolonialism, and this panel that this presentation came from showed that, because, you know, you had forces from different areas, including New York and Oakland, California, and Liberia, West Africa, who were talking about the question of neocolonialism in their area, and how African workers were taking on the question of organizing to address that contradiction. So we're going to play that presentation from 1986. This is Comrade Mario Drummonds at ALD 1986.
So we have to, the question really is, what type of leadership is going to actually move forward? Let's talk now about the Jesse Jackson campaign and what effect it had on the African Liberation Movement. Our thesis is that it really, the mass organizations already by this time in 1984-85 were crumbling in a quantitative sense, in reference to the numbers of brothers and sisters that was in the National Black United Front and the National Black Independent Political Party. These particular political forces were already on their decline due to the nature of the leadership that was in these particular organizations. And I'm going to talk about that question of leadership of black petty, radical black petty bourgeois sector. Who was actually leading these formations, besides the internal contradictions within these particular mass formations. The Jesse Jackson campaign, what it did to the African Liberation Movement, was just put a hold on all the mass work that was actually doing. Of course, the masses was up and running, saying, yeah, run, Jesse, run. Really, not so much understanding the clear nature of what he represented. Of course, revolutionary forces that were out there was trying to, like, bring forth the science of what Jesse actually represented. But based to the nature of his leadership style, charismatic leadership style, the nature of how our people are effective people, a lot of folks were moved into that. And quite unexpectedly at times, revolutionary forces of all type of stripes in itself was involved in the Jesse Jackson campaign.
Right.
Okay? this form of neo-colonialism, this whole notion, and there's a whole lot of folks in New York City that actually believe that Jesse can win. See what I'm saying? When the new year come in, we're going to have our new president up there. And of course, there were some other folks who was pushing the line of the Rainbow Coalition that basically he's just like a caboose. And he's opened up the way for a lot of other lesser politicians to actually run on the local and the state level. Okay? But there's no real type of carryover on what's going to happen to poor working people in reference to their socioeconomic status. So the major thesis here when we're talking about neo-colonialism is the detrimental effect it had on the revolutionary African movement that was definitely trying to rebuild in New York City. But a lot of forces got caught up in that campaign and dropped their work. Matter of fact, the National Black United Front in New York City, which is basically the core, is not functioning. Okay, to be clear. But I will talk about a sector of that front that I feel is doing some good work, which is the what's the name of that group in Harlem? Harlem Reclamation Project, okay, which is a tendency that's moving away from the national. While I'm at the same time talking about Jesse Jackson, let me talk about this sector, this new sector in the Black Petty Bourgeoisie. I think it's very important that we talk about this sector because at times they can seem very revolutionary at times. I'm having to name names so people can be real clear about what particular social force I'm talking about. I'm talking about people like Reverend Darcy. I'm talking about people like G2YOC. I'm talking about people who came up into the cultural nationalist movement at one particular period in New York City and have made some important contributions to the Black Liberation Movement, not just in New York City, but all over in a small degree, but now are put up as leaders after the revolutionary sector of the Black Liberation Movement was destroyed during the late half of the 60s. These new forces rose up in the mass organizations in itself as the new leaders of our people. Okay, of course, they also have, and I'm not just focusing on two, I'm only using them as an example to label a social force, okay, a tendency within a class formation unto itself. This new force, this radical petty bourgeoisie force right now that has somewhat swayed over our people on a day-to-day basis in itself. These are the same forces as I move into my second thesis in itself in the mayoral election, right, that actually told us to actually support Denny Fowler. Denny Fowler is an African man who the average working class person or day-to-day person ain't never heard of. I never heard of him. But when we look at his class relationships and the nature of forces that he relates with on a day-to-day basis, he has a very close tie to the banking community in New York City. Okay? He is also a party hat, as they were saying about Wilson Greer himself. This man, who, when we look at, we're going to put out a track, we're going to be publishing a political report that basically sums up some of the things that I'm talking about, as well as some of the work that we're trying to do in New York City. When we look at the election results, the election statistics in certain neighborhoods, right, and on like Bedford-Stuyvesant and Harlem, Mayor Koch worked. Denny Fowler. See what I'm saying? Not just Mayor Koch, but Carol Bellamy, another white woman that was running for mayor itself. When we look at the actual precincts and the townships and we look at the statistics, the black masses, they're not moved by these people no more. Okay, even though they have somehow risen up as our new leaders in itself and trying to push forth the Black Liberation Movement, when we look at the hardcore data, when we look at the relationship that these particular forces have with the masses, they don't have no relationship. What I'm saying, brothers and sisters, is that there's a political space that's opened up in New York City where forces like ourselves, forces like the New African People's Organization, forces like the Harlem Reclamation Project, and other revolutionary forces that are trying to rebuild from the last period is trying to fill and trying to fill desperately. The mayoral election was a farce. What happened was Denny Fowler, after he lost, quickly endorsed Mayor Koch as we already knew this. We've been telling folks this, in our community, we was doing mass work there. He just said, hey, well, I'm quite a Democratic Party. Since I done lost, the nomination, I'm just going to move off of that, and I'm going to quickly endorse Mayor Koch. What that has done to the black masses is they see now, they're starting to see the class struggle that's happening in the African community itself. And this is very, very important for us to deal with. Another third important variable when we talk about neocolonialism in New York City, which is somewhat of a recent phenomenon, but right now, I don't know if you've been hearing about it, everybody's scared of everything in New York in the political and economic system. So I'm saying, you know, plenty of conscious administrators, right, had to resign because they catching them taking money from here, taking money from there. Constantly look at the latest statistical report, supposedly a poll that was done by a reputable company. Conscious even lost support of a broad spectrum of his actual political base. Forces, you know, in the black, in the professional managerial class, other forces that supported him in his race earlier, these folks are saying, what's going on? You know what I'm saying? What was it all started in? It's somewhat clean, even though we knew this stuff was going on from Jump Street. Somehow it's all coming out on Front Street in itself. And it's called government as a burglar, burglars too. We, matter of fact, the Community Self-Defense Program, we're trying to put out a political track because what we've done, we've collected all the data sets, this thing that jumped off in the beginning of January, on who was taking this, who was doing that, what policemen did this, what rally could hold another thing is cracking in New York City. We're finally realizing that the police department has a big role in distribution of this mess in our community and as well as using it in itself. So that's a real big problem, the graft that's going on in New York City. Not a problem for us because we already knew what was going on, but it's a big problem for those who rule. And the black petty bourgeoisie politicians and also leaders have not actually made a response. Here again, it opens up political space for us to discredit the system. See what I'm saying? Especially to forces that we work with on a day-to-day basis who have some belief in the Democratic Party, who have some belief in this system. And every day they see in newspaper reports about this one being arrested and the grand jury done hooked up on this one itself. I'm going to end my discussion in reference to indicators of neo-colonialism in New York City. And I would like to talk about some of the socioeconomic conditions that's happening in our base area, particularly in our base area, because when I say our base area, the Community Self-Defense Program works in a 25-block radius. You know, we're trying to be professional in our work. Of course, we want to organize New York City. You see what I'm saying? But what we're trying to do right now is be very, very familiar with the blocks and projects in our base area. See, because we say we're going to take that. See what I'm saying? We're going to liberate that. And the way we're doing that is gathering as much information about that area in reference to the census material, in reference to going to the masses, in reference to doing our own field studies of what's going on, what are the problems of the masses, what you need, who you fear, what's your political support of our politics in itself. Okay? This is important for us. This is the type of work that we're doing. But before I get to our own organizational work, I would like to talk about some important variables that need to be talked about when we talk about neocolonialism and what's happening in New York. There are forces who are working in New York, and I had mentioned a few. The New African People's Organization, myself. One of the major issues that's in New York right now today is housing. Okay? The welfare hotels in New York are just horrendous. People have been knowing that for years. The contradiction is like glaring right now. Right now, the average person that lives in a welfare hotel a month, really the welfare is paying that hotel owner for a little small room about $2,000 a month. Right? $2,000 a month. Right? And again, if what they're living in, four or five people, six or seven people living in a little piece of room, right off to the side, with no real central services, no type of support services for the youngins that's in there and itself, it's a contradiction. The vacancy rate in New York City is very, very, very low. Housing is a big thing. Everybody's looking for a place to stay. That's why some of the trees in here in Philadelphia that, you know, folks can have houses here, you know? It's like something that, you know, I'm not making any kind of, you know, criticism. It's just like a new thing, you know, trying to learn the community. And housing there is like a dire need for the people. And one formation that flew out of the Black United Front is the Harlem Reclamation Project. And they've been doing a lot of work. They've been trying to take some housing in Brooklyn itself. Matter of fact, we're putting a call out soon to a lot of political forces in New York or for some of the work that's already been done, especially on the West Coast. Seems like a lot of folks, you know, there's been a lot of reverberation from the struggle that the African People's Socialist Party has been waging around housing and the homeless people on the West Coast in itself. And a lot of people are picking up on some of the lessons that were actually laid out in the Sphere and in other forums where people are actually trying to make an economic analysis of the system in itself. And how, what effect does that have on housing? What effect does that have on social services? What effect does that have on other actual systems? When we talk about neocolonialism, we cannot talk about it in its own political sphere, but as politicians, we have to talk about an infrastructure, right? An infrastructure that we're going to have to destroy. Okay? And we're talking about that in a strategic sense, right? But of course, in a tactical sense, in our day-to-day work, we're building for that. And we're building a new infrastructure in itself. It's slow work.
Right on.
We're cutting a new path out of here. But we're prepared to do that because we know if we're going to win, this is the type of base work that we're going to have to do.
Right on.
Okay? So when we talk about neocolonialism, we can't talk just about a politician. We have to actually talk about the state. Okay? And in New York City, a lot of the state institutions in New York City are controlled by Africans or run by Africans and stuff. And so we talk about social services, you talk about housing, you talk about any other thing that, you know, that actually proposes to provide services for our people in itself. African people are ahead of those things. See what I'm saying? And sooner or later, we're going to be bumping heads with those two forces in itself. I'm going to end my discussion by saying a few things. I don't want to take up all the time, but in July of 85, some forces started to come together called the African Activist Study Network in relationship to a number of killings of our young people in New York City. We put out a statement the other day on two young brothers that got shot in the back by the Newark, not the Newark, another town somewhere close to Newark. Police department and in Crown Heights in Brooklyn, two young brothers got killed. But I think William Perry in July of 1985, or in early that part, I think I'm getting what time it was, I think I'm making verify that got killed. And the Black Petty Bourgeoisie response to that was lay down and kneel. And pray to the Lord that this won't happen again. So, we realize we couldn't do anything, you know, to take it on too tough. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking about revolutionary forces because we were scattered. We didn't have an organizational forum, or we're not talking about organizational forum, we're talking about a coalition or some type of interaction between the revolutionary forces in New York. And then we realized to ourselves that we were outflanked by the Black Petty Bourgeoisie. Okay? So what happened was a number of forces, like New York Action Committee, NAPO, ourselves, three or four other forces that are trying to build from below, came together, and we're starting to meet and discuss some of the important questions that are jumping off in New York City. Right now, we're in the discussion phase, but each of our forces are doing work that we try to bring some of the lessons from that work. So if somebody else is going to be doing some mass work in Harlem, right, or in the Bronx or in Queens, at least they have, you know, some actual lessons from us doing it and pointing out the pitfalls and telling about the successes that need to be moved on and stuff. We understand that we're weak in New York City. And we came together because we knew that the Black Petty Bourgeoisie controlled that demonstration. We couldn't do anything. We even helped organize it to a real and a rudimentary sense. But the slogans, everything else, the nature, the character of the demonstration was actually controlled by them. Okay? And we had to actually do some self-criticism. We had to go back and reevaluate the period, right, which we're doing right now, and actually make some projections for change, make some new formations that need to be built in this new period to take leadership. Okay? I'm going to end my discussion right there, and that is especially the question of leadership.
Right on.
See what I'm saying? That's the other focus. We're trying to train new revolutionary leadership right now. And you go at our table in the back, we've been training leaders for the last 2 years because we know that ain't going to happen overnight. You know, the masses know a lot of different things, but they have to know how to do certain things. Okay? And we train the working class leadership. Okay? That's important. The question of leadership right now in New York is a very important question. I have to admit, the Black people who was in the South Florida.
There was another excerpt from African Liberation Day 1986, held in Philadelphia, under the banner, "No More Sellouts, Black Workers Take the Lead." And that's still true today. The African working class must take the lead. Only way we're going to have African liberation is through the African workers taking the lead, and along with the poor peasants, and uniting and liberating our Africa. And we're going to continue with more excerpts from African Liberation Day 1986, and keep calling on you to be at African Liberation Day 2007. You can't go back in time and go to the one in 86, but you can come to the one that's happening on May 26th, Washington, D.C. So stay tuned to more from the 1986 ALD, and we'll talk some more about the one coming up.
Chairman O'Malley, yes, you tell her. Two words.
Turn me up, C-Los, turn me up.
Two words.
Come on now.
Miss P Production.
I hear you most deaf,
C-Los.
Kanye.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Oh.
I like
Miss P Production.
Yeah.
Like
two words.
Two words.
What's up, man?
Nice.
Nice.
Some
tears in the beard.
Government. Africa.
President of Pico of Azania. I keep my ear on Uhuru Radio, the voice of the International African Revolution. One Africa, one nation.
Touch one, touch all. Ain't nothing but cellmates. Touch one, touch all. Come and hold me with
touch one, touch all. You fuck up on the bus, then we all gonna fall. That's how it is when you African. We all part of a master plan. So we don't deal with the government. And we don't talk to no fucking pigs.
Uhuru. Welcome back to Africa Live on uhururadio.com. You're being in Zimbabwe, and we talking about African Liberation Day. Upcoming African Liberation Day is going to be happening on May 26th in Washington, D.C. Be there. It's under the banner of One Africa, One Nation, recognizing all around the world, African people, we one people. And the issues that we're dealing with are a result of the fact that we've been divided, that our Africa has been taken from us, and we've been taken from our Africa. And that the resolution of every contradiction that African people are facing on a daily basis is our liberation as African people, is our freedom, is winning control of our own lives, of our own Africa, and guaranteeing a future for ourselves. We've been playing up to now excerpts from the 1986 African Liberation Day that happened in Philadelphia. 1 year after the MOVE bombing, the U.S. government bombing the African community, targeting the organization called MOVE. We're going to continue with that. This presentation I'm about to play an excerpt from is one made by Omowale K. Fing, who was a leader in the African People's Socialist Party. And who was part of this panel discussion dealing with the question of neocolonialism, and he was presenting from Oakland, California. So this is Brother Omowale K. Fing, 1986 African Liberation Day.
My name is Omowale K. Fing. I'm going to talk about the struggle against neocolonialism in Oakland, California. But before I do that, I just want to mention one something about the struggle against neocolonialism in Birmingham, Alabama, that Sister Sheridan did not mention. In Birmingham, there's a black mayor, Richard Ayer, before he was elected mayor, Mofunji, who's got a great deal of respect among the people of Birmingham, helped work to put Richard Addington in office. Has a relationship to a friend of his family, Sister Cal and the children. But he cannot stand up and demand that the Mufundi be set free. That is the character in a lot of sense of what we're talking about. Nothing personal. That this Addington might have been a good guy, right? But he represents neo-colonialism. I think that is clear in Birmingham, Alabama, and it is clear in other places that people have talked about on tonight. Just want to say a little bit about something about Oakland, California. I think it's been stated earlier that Oakland was the birthplace of the Black Panther Party. And the world has been there for many years. And after Bobby Seals, the Panthers had put a seal on the mayor. And as we understand it, they did fight people even voted against Seals to force the runoff election. That soon after that, subsequent to that, the judge, Lionel Wilson, was put up for the people. I don't want to say that he had a mandate from the black community, because I don't think that was the case, but black people did overwhelmingly vote for Lionel Wilson to put him in power as he was running against the old man white glove represented by Mayor Redding and the big corporations there. Now, and I think it's important to say that because even as Doc was talking about Wilson Good here in Philadelphia and his having a mandate from the black community here in Philadelphia, it was the ADA, a white democratic organization in the Philadelphia 76, another white organization in this town that represents the corporations that put Wilson Good forward in the first place and brought him to the black community and say he is. And that's how we got a chance to vote for Wilson Good here in the city of Philadelphia. We had initially gone into Oakland with the same politics that we've been putting forward down through the years. And one of the black people must be independent and free from U.S. colonialism. And that, for the most part, the places where we were had to come straight up face to face with white power, undisguised colonial rule that everybody could see. It was different in Oakland, California because the mayor is black and the majority of the city council is black. So that every time you raise a struggle, it's the black folks who are on the TV and on the radio who are attempting to characterize those who would struggle out of, who would struggle outside of what the bourgeoisie has defined for us, those limitations that we should struggle in, otherwise we were fanatic or crazy or something like that. It was the black politicians who were putting this forward and who were giving the police justification to attack our organization and those people who support the work that we do in Oakland, California. But I think probably the most essential characteristic some of the this fallout of neo-colonialism and the destruction of the Black Revolution in the 60s is its effect on the African working class masses that the tendency to have put the masses to sleep with regard to, well, these guys in the 3-piece suits will do it for us. Therefore, we don't have to take on the responsibility of doing it. I think that in a lot of cases, that has been, the most harmful thing that has happened to us in our movement and our militants. I was listening as Doc talk about the way that they were more or less the infantry, while these other guys set up and made the negotiations, did the negotiations with the bourgeoisie. What we were looking at, and I think that this is the case throughout the country, that neo-colonialism has put forward, is that these other guys actually had the organization while we had nothing for ourselves in the form of organization. What we did would be to go out and do the work as this organization of top people had defined that we should do the work. And even our with regard to black working class leadership absolutely leaving us. And I think that we can look around us and even see the effects that is having on the movement, the revolutionary black movement on today. Our absolute refusal to understand that it is going to be ourselves, black working class men and women, who are going to have to take the leadership of our own movement into our own hands, that nobody else is going to do it for us. I was in Philadelphia. I've been here for the past couple of months, and there are a lot of good forces here in this city who want to do this work and who do this work. And when I had come, it was to help organize for this National African Liberation Day. It was still sort of a feeling of, this guy can do it for us, as opposed to the leadership that's going to have to, that is necessarily going to have to come up right here in Philadelphia and take on what needs to be done here. In Oakland, we had attempted to raise the community up so that it could, fight back in its own interest. And that, again, it was on every occasion the black petty bourgeoisie who had, who were used to knock this movement back. And when we were, in fact, have the ability to organize the masses, what we would find out was that there was a general tendency that everybody is the same in terms of all of the organizations being the same, that because that was a point where there were, maybe 40, 50 people working the Black Community Control Committee, and the goal is to struggle, get recognized, make sure that everybody know who you are, so that you can be offered a piece of the pie, so that your organization can become a part of the neo-colonial structure that has been put in place there, either by becoming one of the city connected, they have neighborhood boroughs in Oakland, California, that they call the grassroots organizations, but all of them are tied into the city administration, which is the essence of the neo-colonial structure. Yeah, that every, something like the block capitals here in Philadelphia, where they got the neighborhood boroughs there in Oakland, and they would oppose everything we do. In addition, there's a serious white left in Oakland, California, and nearby places like Berkeley and San Francisco. What I mean by serious is that they are serious that no revolution ever occurred inside this country. We're talking about people who are supposed to be socialists and communists, but yet would reject a community-controlled housing law that we had put on the ballot, the November ballot in Oakland, California, 1984, raising up either communist measures, raising up such things as this law is too punitive to the slum law, that this law is unconstitutional. Now, these are communists who are saying this, that this law is poorly written. Anything to deny the right of black people to organize ourselves and fight in our own interests. More clearly, what can be more clearly seen is the struggle that we made around one of our community centers, the Hoodie House. We had been engaged in nearly a 3-year rent strike against the white absentee slumlord there in the city of Oakland. We had battled them tit for tat on all down the line for those videos. They were unable to evict us. By the time they decided that they would take the position that they did on the move organization here, we had pretty much strategically mapped out a situation so that we could come out victorious and that we would not lose any forces.
That's about it for today for Africa Live here on AhuraRadio.com. But stay tuned for Ahura on the Move, which is next, and we'll be featuring a interview with Lakeisha Watson, who is the mother of Desiree Watson, who was arrested in Avon Park, Florida, and charged with a felony. And 2 misdemeanors, allegedly, for having a tantrum at school. This is a 6-year-old girl who was charged with these things. So stay tuned for Ahura on the Move. And again, be at African Liberation Day on March 26th, which is a Saturday in Washington, D.C. Find out more information about ALD at www.alduhuru.org. That's www.alduhuru.org. This is Nyabinga Zimbabwe signing out for Africa Live. One Africa, one nation.
Reality, a call for an all-embracing, unconditional love for all men. This oft-misunderstood and misinterpreted concept, so readily dismissed by the Nietzsches of the world as a weak and cowardly force, has now become an absolute necessity for the survival of mankind. Let me say finally that I oppose the war in Vietnam because I love America. I speak out against this war, not in anger, but with anxiety and sorrow in my heart, and above all with a passionate desire to see our beloved country stand as the moral example of the world. I speak out against this war because I'm disappointed with America. And there can be no great disappointment where there is no great love. I'm disappointed with our failure to deal positively and forthrightly with the triple evils of racism, economic exploitation, and militarism. We are presently moving down a dead-end road that can lead to national disaster. America has...
Jobs can come, but tell me we're going to be in it for our people who could be a part of it. So here's what they say. More than 50 permanent, desperately needed jobs will be created if a renewable energy supplier obtains an agreement to supply Grand Bahama Power Company with energy from refuse-derived fuel, RDFs, acronyms. Tribune Bahamas was told yesterday. The business plan for E-Fuel Bahamas, a copy of which has been seen by this newspaper, said the energy supplier had obtained $100 million in financing from the U.S. Export-Import Bank.
That's not here today. You see, the police, they came and they took him for a ride. You see, he was not fighting that war. You know, the one they call the war against the poor. And he would not bow down to genocide.